And welcome back once again for the 348th installment, Parish of the Patriots, here at RadioAlbion.com. I appreciate you joining us once again this week. If it's your first time, I always hope there's some first timers. I hope you'll listen to the whole thing. We do have a Christian specific segment, a sermon, if you would. That's roughly, very roughly sometimes, the halfway mark of the show. I invite you to give it a listen. It is geared towards people. Well, for one, it's geared towards people who are already believers. It isn't geared towards trying to convince non-believers or things such as that. But regardless, you may get something out of it. I hope you'll give the whole thing a shot. Give the whole show a shot, then make your decision whether it sucks or not. And you may think it sucks. That's okay, too. But you should at least give the entire thing. Give the entire thing. I do strive to be entertaining, informative, to have something. You know, my idea is to come away and go, well, I hadn't thought of it that way. Or that's a pretty unique way to look at things. I don't know. Sometimes that may work. Sometimes it may not. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. I've got snail mail. You look on my description page for the show right here. The summary's written up of the content of the show, which most people probably skip over because I'm guilty of it too. If at the bottom, there's a snail mail address. That's what I got. The cryptocurrency addresses on Radio Albion, those are from Sven from before he went away. So you can, that's not me. I don't have access to that. I got snail mail. That's it. Don't be emailing me going, how can I really like your show. How can I support it? It's right there. Fill out an envelope. I don't know how. I don't know what to tell you, man. I don't, you don't even have to write your note in cursive. It's not even that hard. And we do have some listener supporter mailbag, but we got one anyway. This from Triangle Whip. GPD, get some turkey and celebrate a white man's Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving. Again, that's from Triangle Whip. Thank you very much. Turkey. You know, Trent. Yes, I talk about whatever the hell I want to on this show, including turkey. That's probably like the one time of the year. Is it that way for y'all? Because like for me, Thanksgiving is like the one time a year I eat turkey. I don't eat turkey, I don't think, any other time. Or maybe once in a great, great while, I might have, like, I don't know, a smoked turkey sandwich or something. But for the most part, Thanksgiving is the only time of year I eat turkey. And it ain't that great. I ain't going to lie. And the reason is because it's just not that great. I mean, it is. You sit down at the Thanksgiving. I hope you have at least at some point in your life had the experience of sitting down with family, you know, and you got the big turkey there carved. You know, if you have that experience now, you know, enjoy it, because the older you get, you know, family members leave, you know, they die. There's another word. They die. And that gathering at the table gets smaller and kind of sad. It gets a little more sad, a little more somber, as there's fewer people, you know. And people get grown and the kids get grown and they go off and they're doing their own thing. It works that way. But, you know, you got the big bird there. And everybody's got their favorite part, the turkey, you know. For me, it's the skin. You know, I'd be a kid, even as an adult, I ain't gonna lie, I say as a kid trying to kind of brush that off, but even as an adult, I sneak in there and peel some of that skin off and crunch it. Love that stuff. And of course, the dark meat on the turkey. That's the best. Any kind of bird, chicken or turkey, either one, I'm all about the dark meat. I can't do all that. I can't do that white meat. I got to have that dark meat. That's where the flavor's at. And you get your turkey. You rip off a leg, set it on your plate. Get you some mashed potatoes, gravy. I've never been a big stuffing man. Because all my meals are basically mashed potatoes and corn. You don't need vegetables. Corn is a vegetable. I don't give a shit. Corn is a vegetable. That's my vegetable. If I really want to get out there, I might have me a salad. But make no mistake, there's going to be enough ranch on that salad to where you don't even see no green. That's a salad for me. But you get your turkey, and you get your mashed potatoes, you got your gravy, and you eat it. It's pretty good. And that's enough damn turkey for me for a year now. Because you always wind up with all this turkey left over, and you don't want to waste it. And so what do? You wind up with turkey sandwich. You wind up with turkey, trying to come up with ideas of a different way to have this damn turkey. And after a week of that, you know, never want to... You don't ever want to see no damn turkey for at least another year. Christmas come around, I'm having ham. I may barbecue. I don't care. Turkey's all right. But once a year is plenty for me. I go, like if I go over, like if you go over to a relative's house and you cook the turkey, you know. And like when it's done, they're like, oh, well, be sure and take your turkey. They're like, no, that's good. I'm going to leave it here with you. You can have some leftovers. No, really. You go ahead. No, no. I insist. You can keep some of the, you can keep the turkey. Please keep the damn. Keep the turkey. I've had enough. It's all good. It's all good. But like I say, once a year turkey, that's it for me. Thanksgiving, I ain't have no damn turkey. Like I say, I'm going to have ham. I'm going to barbecue something. I eat hamburger. I don't give a shit. I ain't eating turkey 1 month later. It's going to be a full 12 months before I'm geared up and ready. And I've tried it all different ways. The traditional baking way, the smoked way. I've done the tried the deep fried turkey way. And it's okay. I'm not downing on it. But I do get enough of the turkey, and I'm sure y'all have had enough of my discussing the turkey. Y'all listening, y'all like, we get it. We don't care. But see, I find discussing turkey more interesting than politics. I don't care. I keep saying this. I don't care about politics because it's a charade. It's a show. And yet, I wind up having to discuss it. Because it is relevant. I mean, I'm not saying it's irrelevant. I just don't care about it. When you realize that it is all fake and on some level gay, I don't expend. It cracks me up when I run into people and they expend all of this mental and spiritual energy on politics. You know, when they get emotional about it. It's usually people on some level of just starting to kind of figure things out. And they get so whipped up and so emotional about it. And you're like, bruh, you know, it doesn't matter. What do you mean it doesn't matter? It doesn't matter. I can assure you, I expend as little, as close to the number zero on emotional, spiritual energy on politics. Well, we may discuss it here on the show because it's relevant. And it is important to just at least to understand the truth of what's going on. But as far as actually having a belief that it matters, it doesn't. Trust me. It doesn't matter. Don't expend emotional, mental, spiritual energy on it because it doesn't make shit. It really doesn't. Now, I'm not saying it isn't going to affect you. I'm just saying it's theater. The shows they put on. They're just shows. A good example of this, and I discussed it on one of my Daily Mail Monday, Daily Nationalists a couple weeks ago. But we were just subjected to another, and that's the way I view it, subjected to. We were just subjected to another election cycle here in the U.S. I hate it because the theater, that's showtime. These elections, when they come around, showtime. And the shows suck. It's like anything else on TV. It sucks. Now, the main feature of this last show was the mayor election in New York. See, you always have a main feature. If it's a presidential election year, that's by default going to be the main feature. It's an off year, as they call it. It is a non-president election year. So they have something else. They turn that into the center of the show, the center stage for the show. And then for here in the U.S., it was this mayor election in New York City. But run up to this election, you know, they're hyping this up, this guy's, and you hear the people, the Fox News types, and they're like, this guy's an Islamic jihadi communist. It's like, can you throw any more names out there? Any more adjectives? Yes, anti-Semite, of course. And I referenced it. There was a story I did on the Daily Mail Monday show from the Daily Mail, obviously. And it was this whole big, long story warning that if this guy gets elected in New York City, all of these rich Jews are going to flee the city because it could be another Holocaust or something. And I just laughed because it's like, no, they're not. They're not worried about this guy. If you have to, you may not live in America. New York City is like, that is like the center, power center, particularly for Jewish people in the U.S. I mean, that's not contrary. It's just a statement of fact. It's like saying we have lots of Hispanic people in Texas. That's just a fact. I mean, it's just New York City is probably the center for Jewish people, wealthy Jewish people in America. And if they felt threatened by this guy in any way, shape, and form, he would not be anywhere near being on any ballot. He would not be near any of that. Like, they're just going to get up and run away from the city because this guy somehow organically got on the ballot. And people buy this shit. I was like, I really got to laugh watching some reactions after the election. Because, you know, oh, what a shock, this guy got elected. Like, woo, wow, couldn't have seen that coming. They, you know, it's like running Kamala Harris against Trump. And we're supposed to, Trump pulled it off. Yeah, this doesn't look staged at all. They run Cuomo against this guy. Nobody likes Cuomo. But I found it hilarious looking at it, seeing a few videos of lefties, the Team D cheerleaders, after this guy got elected. And what I found funny about it, because one thing, as I started at the beginning, you know, I don't care about politics, but what I do find entertaining is people's reactions to it. You know, I do find human nature interesting. Politics, not so much. But the way people behave, now that I find interesting. And one of the things I found really humorous and really interesting is you had all of these people, podcasters on YouTube or whatever, you know, just run-of-the-mill shit libs, and their reactions to this guy getting elected. And there was just this gushing, this guy's going to do all of these amazing things. And what I found funny about that is these same people now, for at least a year, have been criticizing the red hat, the Trump, you know, the hardcore MAGA people, the red hat crowd, for like falling for a cult leader, you know, for their just blind support for this cult leader, regardless of what he does. And it was correct criticism. They were right about that. I leveled that same criticism myself. And then though, those same people turn around and this whole mayor getting elected in New York City, and they're doing the literal exact same thing as they spent at least the last year mocking and criticizing the red hat guys for. It's just that now it's their guy and they're doing the exact same thing. It amazes me. The people, now, I mean, I don't know, when you're talking about, you know, YouTubers or whatever, there's a lot of paid shill stuff, and I get that. But even setting that aside, just seeing them do the exact same thing that they've been making fun of the red hat people for, and like, it's lost on them. Like, it just over their head, they don't stop and go, hey, wait a minute, I'm doing the same thing I've been talking about those guys doing. Which, my lack of critical thinking. I lack critical thinking. They this would require self-reflection. It's not going to happen, but it is interesting. That part's interesting. Watching people do the same thing they've been mocking the other guys for doing. Now, this brings me to what I really wanted to get to, which is to break down. You've heard the saying, people have said it, you're not going to vote your way out of this. You look at the mess that the West is, that the U.S. is in, and you will see somebody, you know, make the statement that you're not going to vote your way out of this. And I think that's where a lot of the, by the way, I agree with that statement. I want to break down what that statement means here in a minute. Because you can read that it's kind of vague. You know, and there's several ways to read it. When you read somebody saying, you're not going to vote your way out of this, it's easy to simply read that as they're implying that, you know, you're going to have to take up my guns. It's America. You got to get up my guns. And that's incorrect. But the statement in and of itself is true. That you're not going to vote your way out of this. I thought we'd get into looking at the reality of that, because you see people clinging to this idea that somehow they still are. So what does it mean to say you're going to vote your way out of that? It is just because what that means to me, what that statement means to me is all of these elections, this whole theater, it's nothing changes. I've been on this world long enough. I can tell you, I cannot tell you how many cycles of the quote unquote most important election ever I have been through, and literally nothing has changed. It has. It's gotten worse. Seeing these people gushing over this mayor of New York City like their lives are really going to get better now. The cost of living in New York is going to plummet. Their rent's going to become affordable. They're going to be living in utopia. And again, I know there's shill behavior here, but still, there are people that apparently believe that. Granted, a lot of them are younger guys. You know, they don't know. They don't have any experience. But trust me, I've been through so many of these. Nothing is going to get better. They really think that this guy, as mayor, he's going to take the money from the super wealthy class in New York City, who is not fleeing to Florida because it's going to be another Holocaust. He's going to take their money away from them. He's going to force them to charge you reasonable rent. He's going to take their money from them and raise your standard of living. And people really believe this shit. It's amazing. People cling to the idea that somehow in this system, you know, they're going to vote in some election and it is going to make a difference. And I'm telling you, it's not. Yeah, I got more time on this earth than a lot of people. I'm not super old, but you know, more than young people. And like I say, every election cycle is the most important one ever. And I can tell you, nothing changes for the better. You get more of the same. And to see these people hyping this up like this is going to be a turning point. And then the other side does the same thing. They're all, it's theater. Watch professional wrestling. And that's, and I don't mean just like one episode. I mean like watch it for a while. Because what you will see is, you know, they have these terms, you know, the face, that's the good guy. They call that in wrestling, they call that the face. And the bad guy is the heel. And you will have a whole long, they'll run a whole long series in the wrestling shows. And this guy's the face and this other guy's the heel. And, but then out of the blue one day, they swap it up. And the heel will come out there and they think he's fixing to hit the face with a steel chair from behind. Only they hit the face's opponent. And everybody, oh my gosh. And see, they'll flip it around. And the heel becomes the face, or maybe the face becomes the heel. The good guy becomes the bad guy. It's really informative because that is literally how politics works in the U.S. You are watching WWE. You're watching a wrestling show. And when you realize that, you're not going to vote your way out of it. Your vote isn't going to change anything any more than the people in the wrestling crowd waving their Stone Cold Steve Austin signs, screaming, is going to determine the outcome of that match. That match has already been, the people who run it already know how the match comes out. They already know, you screaming in the crowd and you're cheering for whoever. I haven't watched wrestling in a long time, so I don't even know who the stars are now. But whoever you're cheering for in the crowd, those people cheering in the crowd, that has no effect on the outcome of that match. The match is predetermined. That's how elections work. You're not going to vote your way out of it. Now, of course, people are in denial about this. And you see these discussions come up online where, like, you can watch or read, like, a content creator that's basically making the same point I'm making. And you inevitably have people pop up in the comments that are basically like, oh, yeah, then what then? Then what are we supposed to do? You know, you're sitting there saying Team R isn't the answer. You're sitting there saying Team D isn't the answer. You're saying they're on the same team, which is observable reality. Well, then what? If you don't vote, you're part of the problem. Okay, Mr. Smarty Pants, what's the answer? Well, here's the thing. And this is the way to correctly view these things. Once you realize it's just theater, is you quit taking part in it. And what I mean by that is, you are voting for, I'm going to sit here and say your vote doesn't mean anything, because that's not correct. Your vote does have meaning. That's why they try to encourage as many people as they can to come out and vote. Not because that determines the outcome of an election, but it does mean something. So your vote means something. They obviously want you to do it. They don't discourage people from voting. So your vote does mean something. So then the question becomes, okay, what does it mean? When you vote, you're voting, what you're voting for is not a candidate, because that doesn't matter. Once you're down to whatever the Team D or the Team R candidate is, those who pick these people, they don't give a shit. They've pre-selected who you're going to get to choose between. And for the most part, they don't care. There can be, you know, caveats to that, but they don't care. So when you vote, what you're actually voting for, what they do care about, the reason they want you to vote, is what you are voting for, what you are casting your vote for, is the legitimacy of the system. I know I've said this before. I want to get into it a little more. Your vote is saying is that you agree that the system is legitimate. Otherwise, why would you vote? Like me, I'm not voting. I'm done with that shit. I've tried that. I've done it. I've gone through the charade enough. I'm not doing it anymore. Because when you vote, you're saying that it can work. I don't understand how people think that a system that has been well designed to function in a certain manner, this system is designed to make sure that you don't have a voice. It is designed to make sure that those who have power, the elites, whatever you want to say, maintain power. This and they've had, people will say, yeah, well, Hitler was elected and he managed to get power. Yeah, that's because they hadn't perfected it yet. Trust me, they learned lessons from that. It's perfected now. You're not going to have an outlier character meteor to power now and take over the system. The system is designed to make sure that no actual change happens. And the idea that you're going to use that system and make it somehow not perform the function that it's been very well designed and honed over the years to accomplish, you're somehow going to short circuit it and make it do something for you. That's not realistic. It's just not. When you vote, you are saying on some level or another, and you still see people literally make the argument that you got to vote for the lesser of two evils. It doesn't matter. You're voting. The reason they want you to vote is because that does say you're making a statement, and you're making a statement to the legitimacy of the system. In other words, you're still supporting the system because you're participating in it. I have to mingle faith in here because the two are not separable. You live your faith in this world. I'm not going to get real preachy at you. But as believers, Christian believers, we're told to come up out of the wickedness, come up out of the worldly things. So you see, as a believer, I'm not going to participate. When I realize that the system, when I accept the fact and the truth, and I come to the understanding that the system itself is wicked and evil, I am commanded as a believer to come up out of it. In other words, you don't participate in it. And I'm not.
Well, then you can't complain.
Look, you can't. No, you're the one that can't complain because you're still participating in it. Here's a scenario for you. So you've got a nice car. You got a big muscle car. You got a nice car. And you have a friend that's real sketchy. And you know he's sketchy. Been to prison and shit. And this friend shows up one day and he says, hey, can I use your nice muscle car or whatever? I want to borrow your car. And you know this guy is sketchy. And you toss him the keys. Go ahead. What could go wrong? Well, he goes and picks up his homies, and they rob a bank. And then they get in a high-speed chase with the police and crash your car into a bunch of people, jump out and run off. Now, in that scenario, police are going to come up to you, and they're going to be like, hey, your car, you're a part of it. You're like, well, I didn't rob no bank. And the police are going to be like, yeah, but your car was involved. How did this guy get your car? Well, I told him he could use it. And police are going to be like, you know this guy's sketchy. You know this guy's been to prison for armed robbery twice, and you let him use your car. Why would you do that? Why would you think that's a good idea? Police are going to be looking at you real suspicious. Because common sense says you had to know he was up to no good. You know this guy has been to prison twice for armed robbery, and he shows up one day and wants to use your Camaro or whatever the hell. And you let him? Now, come on now. They're going to be convinced that you're a part of it somehow. You were going to get a cut because you provided the car. And you're like, no, I didn't know he was going to do it. I thought he was just going to get some, I don't know, diapers for to give to his baby's mama or some shit. Now, same scenario, only this guy shows up, some guy shows up and sticks a shotgun in your face and says, give me your keys. You're going to give him the keys. You know, anybody is. Somebody jumps out from behind a bush, shoves a 12 gauge in your face and says, give me your keys right now. I'm going to blow your head off. You're going to give him the keys. And then he takes your, you report, you know, he thankfully doesn't blow your head off. He takes your car and you report it stolen. And then he goes and robs the bank and the whole thing plays out. The police, your interaction with the police should, is probably just going to be, well, I got good news and I got bad news. The good news is we found your car. The bad news is they robbed a bank with it, shot the clerk, and then crashed it into a bunch of people. So your car's pretty bad and you're not going to get it back because it's now in the lockup because it's evidence in a crime. But they're not going to be looking at you suspicious because you already reported it. They already know he shoved a 12 gauge in your face. That's how the system is. When you're voting, you're giving the two-time armed robbery felon the keys to your car. You're agreeing to it. Not voting? I'm not participating. I'm still ruled by them. I'm not one of these people that, yeah, I don't recognize their rule over me, so I don't follow their laws, and I'm not paying any taxes, and I'm not... Good luck with that. You know, I'm going to pay my taxes. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be as law-abiding as I can manage. There's so many laws on the book. Everybody breaks a law. If they want to really get picky, they can find something to get you on. But for me, I'm going to try to obey the rules and the laws, and I'm going to pay my taxes. Why? Because there's a 12 gauge in my face if I don't. I see these people on the internet, yeah, well, if you really believe that, quit paying your taxes. Yeah, good luck with that. They're going to take your shit and probably put you in prison. But hey, you stood on principle. I don't believe the people that encourage that. I think they're, most of them are, shall we say, bad actors. But anyway, that's a subject for a different day. The point is, there's a difference between agreeing to it and not agreeing to it. You know, look, they rule over me. That's why I pay my taxes. They got a 12 gauge in my face. I'm going to pay taxes. I'm going to be a law abiding citizen to the best of my ability because there's 12 gauge in my face. But I'm not going to pretend like we're homies and sure, here's the keys to the car. You know, I pay my taxes. I'm going to follow the rules because I'm ruled over by these people, but I don't agree to it. That's the difference. And it is a world of difference. You may think it don't matter, but it really does matter. If it didn't matter, they wouldn't give a shit if you vote or not. I mean, they obviously make the elections come out however they want to. So why do they care that you vote? You know, even if you set aside the spiritual aspect where you always have a choice and the devil wants you to choose wickedness and evil, even setting that aside, I read a little snippet. A guy did a research study and he came with a threshold percentage. I don't remember what it was off the top of my head. But there's a threshold percentage that if the people stop buying into the system, it collapses. And he did all kinds of research and studies of different governments that have fallen and systems that have fallen. And I don't remember, but he put a lot of research in and there is a threshold. And they know this. That's why they want you to keep voting. Because they know there's a threshold that if they had an election, and let's say that you have a presidential election here in the U.S., and of course, as always, they're going to hype it up and tell you, boy, this is Stone Cold versus The Rock, and this is the most important election ever. And they finally, election day comes out. Of course, they've already determined who's going to win, and they hold their election, and say 10% of the population is all that bothers to show up. 90% of the population doesn't even bother voting. Trust me, it's over that threshold. The system can't continue like that. It won't. And it's because of a whole bunch of factors I can't get into right now. But that amount of legitimacy loss, it won't stand. And they know this. This is why they keep trying to encourage everybody to vote. I mean, just as a little example of what this looks like, to make an illustration, because we have a real-world illustration right now. The government, as it were, that rules over, you know, I know it's a front for the West, but the government that ostensibly rules over Ukraine, the Ukrainian government, is an illegitimate government, and it's illegitimate in the eyes of the people there. Not because, like, I have insider, I know. But you can, I'm not Ukrainian is what I'm saying, but you can see it demonstrated. This is an illustration of illegitimate versus a legitimate government, because in the Ukraine, you're at this point now, everybody's familiar with it, like they're short on soldiers. And so they're going out and literally grabbing people off street, like American ICE agents wearing their, you know, masks over their head and grabbing randos off the street. And in Ukraine, they whip up and grab these random guys and beat them up and shove them in a van to go send them to the front. That's what they're down to. And I read an article the other day, and this Ukrainian general, whatever, was talking about they've had over 200,000 desertions. See, that's an illegitimate government. Because if you had a legitimate government, you flip it over, if you had a legitimate, the government there in Ukraine was legitimate and the people were behind it, they would have people volunteering to fend off the evil Russians. You see, they have all this propaganda they feed us in the West, but the reality is, if the people in Ukraine themselves believed the evil Russians were so evil and they've got to defeat them at all costs, and the government was legitimate, they would have people lined up at the military offices to go do their training and do their patriotic duty to fight for their country. Instead, everybody's trying to get the hell out, reasonably so. They're having to beat people up and shove them in vans off the street. And then, even then, of course, those people, first chance they get, they hightail out of there, which is a smart move. See, and of course, they're losing. They're losing the conflict. Because, of course, they are. Because it can't stand. That regime cannot stand because it's illegitimate. The people will not participate. Everything about this system is illegitimate. They use these terms, marketing terms. I'm going to wind up running long. I don't want to spend too much time on this. And honestly, I paused for a minute debating on whether to go off into this other subject, but I'm going to try to do it briefly because it does tie in. They pervert these terms. I always refer to this system as the democracy system. I mean, you apply it to the US, UK, whatever country in Europe you want to, but I call it the democracy system. It's not democracy. They call it our democracy. That's a marketing term. You're supposed to have ownership. It's ours, you see. Only you don't really have any role in it except to do what you're told. It's not democracy. It's the democracy system. It's what they've named it. It wouldn't make any difference if they called it whatever the hell else other name they picked. But they picked the democracy because they did market research, and that's the term they use. Now, conservatives here in the U.S., they always like to butt in like they're smart. You got to love these guys, you know, smart boys, you know.
Well, guess what? It's not a democracy. You just showed how dumb you are. In America, we have a representative republic. Representative republic. See, it's a different.
I always love that. So, you're right. That's what we have. We don't vote for, because if we have a democracy, and this highlights, it's not the flex that people that bring that up think it is. You're right, we have a representative republic, not a democracy. So this is an admission that the term democracy is misleading here. But it's the democracy system. That's the term we'll use for it. But you're right, we don't vote on policy. We vote for representatives who supposedly vote on our behalf. They don't, but that's what they tell us they do. But it doesn't work, does it? You think about the fact that, you know, they go on about the democracy this, democracy that. Imagine, we don't need all these representatives. We really don't. And this is just an example of thinking outside of the box, because over and over again, they continue to try to give you these false choices. Your only choices, like here in the U.S., your only choices are what you have now, or if you don't like what we have now, communism. You know, that's part of the messaging from this mayor race in New York City. Well, if you don't like being ruled over by corporations and like 1% super billionaires, then and your foreign policy being run out of Israel, then your other choice is communism. Oh, you're going to love living under communism. Of course, it's a false paradigm. They give you the false choice. Pick a team. Which side are you on? Like, there's no other choice. There's no other options. You either get what you have now or communism. Do you love Stalin? Let's resurrect Stalin from the grave and let Stalin run things. What are you, some kind of communist? If you don't like our current system, get the hell out, buddy. You must be some kind of communist. You're not supposed to imagine there could be any other way. And there's multiple other things we could do which would be better than this shit show. This whole voting for these representatives, this does not work. You don't get anything that you want. And imagine, we don't need these people. Just as an example, and this is just something not even well thought out. This is just something off the top of my head. So don't pick it apart and say, yeah, but what about this? I'm just throwing it out there to prove the point that there's multiple other things you could do. We don't need these representatives. You could have one representative. Look, you could have, like, say, a handful of representatives. That's it, from each state. And Congress could be in session for, say, 3 months out of the year. And say your handful of representatives from each state can propose bills, and they can only propose, let's say, 3 bills per person. That's it. They can sit down. They can work on these bills, coming up with ideas in their off time, because they're only in session 3 months out of the year. Because what do they do? What does Congress even do? They hold hearings and stand in front of the media and grandstand. That's all they do. So your handful of representatives, they come up with laws, they come up with bills, and they're only allowed 3. And then at the end of their session, those bills are put to the public for a vote. And let's say you made a rule. The bill cannot be longer than 1 page long and has to be written in plain English. And, you know, the money has to be clearly spelled out. And we have the technology now. They're the ones. Look, they're the ones jumping up and down for digital ID. Here would be an argument for it. You have a digital ID and everybody proves who they are. And then once they feed their information, I'm not for digital ID, don't get me wrong, but you prove who you are. And then you sit down after their 3 month session is up and you go through their bills. This guy has proposed we give $10 trillion to Israel because they're our greatest ally ever. I'm voting no on that, and everybody else would too. We're going to invest $7 billion into researching anal AIDS in rhesus monkeys. No. No. All your budget would be a surplus, because 90% of what these assholes come up with, people would just, no. Nope, not do it. Nope, 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 nope. And they would have to, and all you would need then is some reputable accounting, you know, independent accounting firms to keep eye with what does pass, and the money is spent properly. It gets audited every year, so there's no graft. They can't stick it in their pocket. Imagine that. Imagine just a system like that. I know there's a lot of details you would have to work out. And again, it's not even a serious proposal. It's just to make the point. There's any number of things we could do besides what we have now or communism. Oh, they wouldn't be able to stand it. What, I can only propose 3 bills a year, and they have to be written in plain English, and it can't be more than 1 page long. I can't fill up a whole book of legalese so that you don't know what it says. Remember the famous quote? I think it was Pelosi. Well, we have to pass the bill to find out what's in it. They don't even know what's in it. Why? Because it was written by somebody else. I wonder who. They propose a bill. Then they can only do 3. They can't flood, because otherwise they would flood the people with so many they can't go through it. 3 bills each. And then everybody, they sit down at their computer and put in the time. And see, this would weed out morons too. because even, you know, a handful of representatives from each state, three bills per person at the end of their session, you have to sit down. That's going to take you a while. It's not something you can do in 15 minutes. You're going to have to sit there and read through the plain language of the bill and what's involved, how much money's spent, where the money's coming from, and then vote on it. And the people that are lazy and stupid and they don't want to put in the time, see, they wouldn't participate. And that would be a good thing. You know, that would be the only people that would actually be voting on these bills are the ones that care enough and you know, are going to put in the time to sit down and go through and read the details. We're going to spend this many billions of dollars to, you know, redo, completely rebuild these sections of the interstate highway system. Yeah, I'll vote for that. Yes, we'll spend that money. We need $7 trillion to throw into this already failed new fighter plane project that's already 3 years past its due date, and they've already squandered all the money we've sent them before, but they need another $7 billion for that. No, we're done with that. No. See, they don't want that. When the conservatives start saying, we have a representative republic. Yeah, that's a lot better. How's that working out for you? Any number. There's a lot of different things you could do besides what we have now or communism. It's bullshit. Anyway, we're going to run along. I got to get into the Christian specific segment. I spent too much time, but I wanted to at least make that point. The representative republic. Yeah, that's better. I sure am glad I don't get to vote directly on what we're spending our money on. Thank goodness. Anyway, we got to keep rolling. I'm sorry, we're going to run long. I try to keep the show at an hour. We're going to get long. I can see looking at the time here, we're going to get long. I hope you'll stick with the whole thing. It's not going to be boring. Let's keep going. You know what to do. Fill in those pews. Let's get into this week's Christian-specific segment at the Parish of the Patriots. And this week, I'm going to try to go through several things. We may spend a little more time on one thing rather than another, and then we're just going to move on to another subject, where normally we just get on one topic here and we'll do the whole segment on it. But again, this week, we're going to hit, I think, several different things. I want to start off in the book of Philippians, chapter 2, verses 9 through 11. This will be familiar, I think, most of you. Wherefore, God also hath highly exalted him and given him a name which is above every name. Remember, when we read the Bible and it talks about his name, it means who he is. You know, when asked who are you, Jesus said way, truth, and life. Name goes beyond just what you call him, you know, how you pronounce it, how it's written, how it's spelled. It is in reference to literally who he is. What is your name? Who are you? Who he is. So it's much grander than simply the name of Jesus, you know, as in, you know, saying his name. In other words, if, you know, your name is Bob, you know, you're Bob, that's your name. But as far as who you are, you know, defining your name as who you are, Bob is not simply who you are. Bob is a carpenter. Bob is, you know, does cement work, you know, what you do for a living, you know, are you married? Do you have kids? Are you a family man? Are you a drunkard? Are you, you know, a man of God? It gets into the all-encompassing who you are. Anytime you read, you know, it's important, I think, to remember when you read in the Bible, you know, some, you know, the name, someone's name, it gets into who they are as a person, not just simply, you know, what you call that person. Okay. Wherefore God also hath highly exalted him and given him a name which is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, of things in heaven and things in earth and things under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Now, what does that mean? It means that the truth of Jesus Christ will be witnessed by everybody. When you come across one of these scorners, one of these scoffers, one of these mockers that ridicules your faith and ridicules and blasphemes, and that they think they're so clever, remember, they're going to be faced with the truth. It's inevitable. You know, the inevitability that time runs out for everybody. They're going to be faced with this truth and what that means from their perspective. You see, it's not just going to be like, oh, wow, I was wrong. I think that's a misconception people get that when you think about it, and then they'll be like, well, these people are going to have to admit they're wrong then. It goes way beyond that. It comes to facing the truth. There's judgment, the essence of judgment, facing the truth, being, you know, confronting the truth for what it is when it comes to yourself and everything else, and having to admit that truth. Imagine building your whole life around you're so much smarter than these believers. You're not holding on to those old crazy tales. Those are just made up stories. You're so much, you built your whole identity. One of the things that's pretty common in these type of people is they self-identify as being so much more clever and so much more smarter than these people of faith. They're so much smarter. That's why they understand. That's all a trick. And imagine spending your entire time, or limited time you've been allotted here, building up an identity for yourself as how smart you are. That's why you don't believe, because you're smart. And then actually being confronted with that truth that you're not smart. You spent all of that time building up this idea, and you thought you were so smart, and it turns out you were wrong all along. And you can't deny it. You can't make excuses for it. You're just faced with it. So in other words, when it says every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess, it's not like they're willingly. It's not like, oh, wow, I was wrong. Geez, I guess, shucks, you know. It is being confronted with the truth, and it's not deniable. Of course, you can. Every tongue shall confess, because you have no choice. When you're faced with the truth in the context of you're now not in time, you're in the eternal, then that changes everything. You're just forced to confront it. It's not going to be a pleasant experience. I don't think it's possible to overemphasize the importance of how short time is and how important it is how you spend it. You get one ultimate investment in life, and that is whatever amount of time God gives you. You have got whatever amount of time that you receive, and how are you going to spend it? And we don't know how long you get. Your life could get cut short. Somebody could kill you or something, you know. So we don't know. We can't assume. So how you spend it, because once it's gone, it's gone. I'm not going to read it from the Bible, but I've referenced it several times. Again, we do this segment, I assume that y'all are already, you know, this is, I always say this is geared towards people who are already believers. That way I can skip along stuff that I can assume y'all know about. You know, when if it was brand new believers, or, you know, trying to convince non-believers or something like that, I would spend all my time bogged down trying to explain things and having to read things out, and I ain't got time for all that. We're familiar with the time, though, with the story of that Jesus told, the parable of Lazarus, you know, the beggar and the rich man and all of that, and how they both die. And, you know, the rich man asks Abraham to send Lazarus back to convince his brothers, you know, and Abraham says, no, he's just, this is, that's not going to happen. Now, before that, the rich man asks him to send Lazarus over to just wet his tongue. We'll just dip his finger in some water and wet his tongue, because he's in such misery. He's in hell. And Abraham says, well, you know, basically you got what you got. And second of all, we can't do that if we wanted to. There's a chasm between us. We can't cross over even if we wanted to. Now, then he says, okay, well, can you at least send Lazarus to go warn my brothers, go warn my family, so that they don't fall into the same trap as me? And I was thinking about this story. I think about that story a lot, because it speaks to the finality of after our time is spent, after it's done. And I was thinking the other day, it isn't even about the rich man's brothers. You see, the brothers are the stand-in for himself. In other words, you would think, now you might would think that when the time runs out and people are faced, every knee bows, every tongue confesses, that those who squandered that time, and now they're wrong, they have to confess. In other words, they have to acknowledge. To say they will confess the name of Jesus Christ, that means they have to acknowledge Jesus Christ, the name of Jesus, who he is. He is the way. He is the truth. He is the life. And it's easy to imagine, as I think it's incorrect, that once people have to acknowledge that, then that means they accept it. How do I want to put this? They accept the responsibility for it. But here's the thing. Once you've spent your time, once you've spent your life, that's who you are. That doesn't change. Even you know, you build up who you are over your lifetime. And now you exit time. You enter the eternal realm. We're you know, the realm of God, where time doesn't exist. That you take with you what you built up. That's who you are. That's not going to change. So when you imagine somebody who spends their life scoffing, mocking the faith, not believing in any of that, and now they're confronted, they have to admit, they have to confess the name of Jesus. In other words, they have to admit they were wrong because they're confronted with it. You know, it's not about standing up and telling the class, oh, I was wrong, sorry. It's not that. They have to confess it to themselves. They have to admit it to themselves. They're confronted with that truth. They don't want it. They don't like it. But it's the reality. You can't deny it. It's the truth. But they haven't changed. They're not going to change because they've squandered their time. This is who they are. So now you would imagine that once they're faced with this truth, then on some level or another, they would accept it. But they won't. Even in hell, they won't accept that truth. I mean, they have to acknowledge it because there's no denying it, but they don't accept it. There's a difference here. Now, remember, this isn't just about atheist Bergs. Jesus says there are going to be any number of self-professed Christians that aren't going to make it either. This is even more scary, more tragic, more damning. You know, is it one thing somebody spent their whole life mocking the faith and ridiculing others' faith and belief, and then, you know, they're confronted with being wrong? It's a more tragic thing that Jesus warns us there's going to be people that are like, wait, Lord, I'm one of you. Why are you locking me out? Well, what about me? Wait a minute. What do you mean I'm not getting in? That's really scary. Now, you might imagine that these people, when they find themselves without, on the other side of the chasm, locked outside of the door, however you want to imagine it, that they'd be over there just spending their time, you know, repenting, bowing, and forgive me, Lord, I didn't know. I forgive me, oh God, I would do it different if I could. This is my fault. Forgive me. They're not. That's not who they are now. It's not who they're going to be then. What you would more than likely see, they might do that at first in a hope that maybe they could manipulate the Lord, which of course, but as soon as it becomes apparent that that's not possible, I believe what you're going to see is more of the same. Cursing, blaming others, blaming God himself, because that's who they've been all throughout time. As they matured, that's who they became. And they take that with them. They don't suddenly change. Otherwise, what would be the point of time? What would be the point of the time you spent in this world if, oh, then you're confronted with the truth and now you're changed? You realize, oh, I was wrong. This gets me back to the story of the rich man and Lazarus when he asks Abraham, well, send Lazarus, at least send him to my brothers and tell him. And Abraham's like, well, they've already got the information. They've got the prophets. They've got, you know, the books that Moses has written. And of course, Jesus himself. You know, and he's like, oh yeah, but that's not enough. If Lazarus comes back from the dead, then they'll believe it. And Abraham says, no, not even if a man rises from the dead. And of course, this is obviously a reference to Jesus himself. So when I was thinking about this the other day, and the brothers are actually a proxy for the rich man himself. What I mean by that is this is the rich man still making an excuse. It's not his fault. You know, if you would send, if somebody would have sent somebody, if I would have seen somebody come back from the dead and warned me of what I was, I would have changed. I would have done it differently. You see, the brothers, it's not even about his brothers. This is still making an excuse for himself that it's not his fault. This is not right. I'm not supposed to be here. The brothers are kind of a stand-in for himself. It's an excuse for himself. If somebody would have given me more information, if I would have had, now, when Abraham says, and this is a parable. Jesus isn't, when he told this, he wasn't necessarily, he was using an illustration. Whether the people involved were actual people or not is beside the point. When Abraham tells him, you've already got the information. You've got Moses, you've got the books of the prophets, you have all of these things. And he says, that's not enough. Somebody needs to come back from the dead and jar them awake. If somebody would have come back and jarred me awake, I wouldn't be here. Again, this implies it's not his fault. If you would have done a little more, you see, it's there. He still doesn't get it. He's confronted with the truth. He has no choice of that, but he still is who he is. It's still somebody else's fault. I always think the dynamic is interesting too, because here you're outside of the worldly realm now, and he's still treating Lazarus as beneath him, even though Lazarus is in the kingdom of God and he himself is in hell. In his mindset, Lazarus is still beneath him. He tells Abraham, well, send him over here to wet my tongue. Like he's his freaking servant still. Well, then send him to warn my brothers. Like it's still Lazarus is still beneath him and needs to serve him because he's so smart. He's so important. He's rich. He's important. He's an important guy, even in hell. He still has that mindset. You see, he's faced with the truth, but he hasn't accepted it. He still has the mindset. Why? Because he spent his whole life that way. That was his identity, and that is what he's taken with him. And where even in hell, he still has that mindset. Send Lazarus to do this. Send Lazarus to serve me by wetting my tongue. Send Lazarus to serve me by warning my brothers. Because if they're warned, in other words, if I was warned, if you would have done more and warned me, I wouldn't be here. See, it's everybody else's fault still, even in that situation. Again, the most frightening aspect of this is not, you know, blatant non-believers. Before I move into that, I wanted to make one more point and it slipped my mind. When Abraham tells him, you've already got the information, he's condemned by the fact that others aren't where he is. In other words, you're making these excuses. You know, if I had more information, if somebody would have you to send somebody from the dead, you know, sent back from the dead to warn me, I wouldn't be here. The problem here is that there's others that aren't where he's at. They made it to the kingdom of God, and they didn't have any more information. They didn't start off with any more information than the man in hell did. They managed it. What's your excuse? Well, how come you didn't manage it? You're sitting there still saying it's somebody else's fault, essentially, that if you would have had more warning, if somebody would have come and given you a vision or something. But the problem is, what about the people that are on the other side of the chasm that are in the kingdom of God? And they managed it without any more information than you had. So, you know, that doesn't fly. Now, again, as I started to say, what's really frightening is not the fact that there are those who just spend their time denying the faith. It is the fact that there are going to be people who are actual, you know, self-professed Christians, and they really believe they are, and they're going to be locked out. They're not going to make it. When I see so many of these churches promote this idea that it's so easy to get into heaven, all you got to do is this, that, or the other. You just say these verses out loud and you're in, and it doesn't matter what you do. And yet Jesus warns over and over that it's a narrow way, that he tells where people are going to be locked out, and they're going to be like, Lord, Lord, there's been a mistake. We preached you in the streets. What do you mean? What do you mean we're not in? And he says, go away. I don't know who you are. I don't understand why they refuse to grasp that, because it's the gravity here. Remember, Lazarus and the ones that are in the kingdom of God, they had the same information. They got it. The rich man in hell didn't. There are others inside. They made it inside. Why are you, as a self-professed Christian, you're locked out? There's been a mistake. There's no mistake. Jesus says plainly, I know you not. Go away. You get the inheritance with the evildoers. I don't even know who you are. This is what's really frightening. And it's really sad. And this is the real gravity of heresy. The gravity of these churches that preach nonsense. You know, that preach the things of the world. I saw a news story where there's a church over here in Dallas-Fort Worth, and they were celebrating, made the news because it's so important. And they, you know, they had a project where they painted their steps in the LGBT rainbow flag. Isn't this wonderful? And everybody's standing around, they're smiling, and their woman pastor, and they're so accepting, and they're such good people. They're wasted. Why put on the trappings of the church? They're not going to make it. And you have people who've been deceived. You have people that were told, all you got to do is say a few of these words and you're in. It doesn't matter after that. You know, you've got God locked in and he can't deny you. And they trick them into squandering their time. They deceive them into squandering their time. I don't, you know, the person who says, I'm not doing that, I'm going to live my life for myself, for money, for pleasure, whatever. I mean, you know, at least they're making a decision. It's a wrong decision, but they're making, shall we say, a quasi-informed decision. They say, okay, I've heard what you say about this faith and about eternity and the kingdom of God and all that. That ain't for me. I'm going to get money, hoes. I'm going to live my life the way I want to live it. And at least, you know, they're straightforward what they're going to do. I'll take that chance. What they're essentially saying, I will take that chance. You're saying that, you know, you're warning me I'm going to wind up in hell and torment and I'm going to regret it. That's all well and good. I'm going to take that chance and have a good time here. At least, you know, they're making a, shall we say, an informed choice. That doesn't even bother me so much. What I find troubling are these heresies so many churches are doing. And, you know, they get these people and they just convince them that you're good to go. You're good. Drive down. I'll be driving along and I'll see a church with an Israeli flag hanging off of it and a sign, "We stand with Israel." And I mean, I wouldn't even go in there. Why would I? You know, it's like, you already know it's rotten inside. You know, why would you just feel it's like picking off a piece of fruit. And before you eat it, you cut it open. You see the inside of it is rotten. May look good on the outside, but you cut it open with your knife to check out the inside. If you ever picked fruit, you do that. You don't just, you know, you like watch TV. People in the city, they don't know. They watch TV. I when I was growing up, we had fruit trees in our yard. They're all gone now because they're a long time ago. But we had fruit trees in our yard. So as a little kid, I would climb up the tree and pick the fruit. And I'm going to tell you, you learn real quick, because you might pick a peach or an apricot. And you might be like, man, this thing looks good. You don't bite into that right off. You could cut it open because it might be rotten in the center. It may look good on the outside, but it'd be rotten in the center. Or you may cut it open and there's worms in there. You bite into that one time. And look down, there's a worm looking back at you. You do that one time and you learn to cut it open first. The churches, that you cut them open. You don't even got to look in there, because if you pick the fruit and it's already, you see a wormhole in it, you know where there's a worm in there. You ain't even got to mess with that. You see a church with the "I stand with Israel" and they're hanging an Israeli triangle inverted satanic flag on the side of the church. Yeah, you don't got to go in. They're advertising who they are. I wouldn't even consider going in there. Why am I going to bite into the fruit? It's rotten. They're telling me it's rotten. This is what's troubling. Because you've got people that don't know any better, and now on some level they do want to seek out the Lord, and they fall victim to one of these dens of iniquity. I don't know. One of these deceiving churches. And they're just using them for their own purpose. And you went in there telling them, oh, you're good to go. If you do what we tell you, you're going to get in the kingdom of God. And those people believe it. They're deceived. And then they wind up finding themselves locked out. Going, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. I thought I was good to go. I mean, do you think about the fact that we have churches that basically are telling their congregations in not so many words that whether or not they get into heaven is really probably going to be largely dictated on their attitudes towards the modern nation state of Israel, or as I like to refer to it as, the abomination that causes desolation. They're basically preaching to them that you know, their standing or whether or not they get in the kingdom of God might be determined by how much they support the modern nation state of Israel. They're literally preaching that. Now they're dressing it up. But when they do this ridiculous misreading of, oh, God will curse those who curse Israel and bless those who bless Israel, so you need to send some more money. You need to support Israel harder. Well-meaning people that might not know any better might fall for it. And they're going to find themselves locked out. And make no mistake, those who have deceived them, they're facing a serious consequence for it. But before you get tempted to jump to the conclusion of saying, well, that's not fair, they were just tricked, circle back to the rich man and Lazarus. Well, there's others that didn't fall for it. There's others that kept, that maybe at one time they did, but there's other people on the other side of that door that did make it in, that maybe at one point in time had the same view, but then they were still open to confronting the truth, and they grew and they realized that's a deception, and they've shucked it off. They shed it off and kept growing and moving forward. They made it in where these other folks don't. I want to wrap up going to the book of Proverbs, chapter 24. We're going to do verse 30 through 34, which takes us to the end of the chapter. I went by the field of the slothful, and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. And lo, it was all grown over with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. When I saw and considered it well, I looked upon it, and received instruction, yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. As it is on earth, so it be in heaven. When it comes to your faith, a little bit of rest, a little bit of sleep, a little bit of lackadaisical, and poverty can come upon you. In other words, you have to keep putting in the effort. You know, the warnings are there. This, when you read that, most people are going to read the passage I just read and take it away as, yeah, you know, you've got to watch your business. You got to take care of your business. You can't be lazy. You got to work. You got to, you know, otherwise, if you don't work, you don't eat. If you don't work, you're not going to be able to pay your bills, and things are going to go south. And there is truth to that. But it's reflected also in the spiritual. Why the Bible has to be read from a spiritual standpoint, because there's multiple layers here. You look at it one way, and that's true, and then flip it over and look at it the other way, and that's true as well. In other words, you can apply slothfulness to spiritual slothfulness. A little folding of the hands, a little rest, a little, well, I don't need to think about the Lord for now. And then the next day, the same. And then after a while, you don't have time to think of the Lord at all. And now you're consumed by the things. See, just as the reason the vineyard is grown up with thistles, with weeds, with thorns, is because those are always encroaching. If you've ever gardened, if you've ever tried to tend to a really nice lawn or something like that, you know, or you've ever farmed and you're farming your fields, one of the things you learn really quick is that the weeds are always trying to take over. They never stop. See, so many things in this world instruct us about the spiritual. Why do we have weeds? You know, why do we have thorns? Why do we have stickers? Because these things inform us of how things work. You can take and you plant your corn or you plant your whatever in your garden and you tend it, you weed it, you water it, you fertilize it, and it'll start trying to come up, and it's like it's trying to die. Your tomato plants are just trying to die. You're taking such good care of them, and you go out there and it's like they're wilting. It's like, what? I watered it, I've fertilized these things, and you just have to take all this care to get your tomatoes to grow. The weeds, on the other hand, you don't do anything, and they're just sprouting up. They're here they come. No time to, you look around, and you got weeds in your garden again. You just weeded it, and they're back. Meanwhile, the plants you're trying to grow, your tomatoes, your jalapenos, whatever it is you're trying to grow, you tend them, you baby them, you fuss over them, you put nets over them to keep the bugs off, you put fertilizer, you dig little trenches so the water will get to the roots, and they're like, well, I don't know, I mean, just die today. And you look over here in the weeds that you're doing everything you can to stamp out, everything you can to yank them out, oh, they grow just fine. They ain't had no water. It doesn't matter to them. Here they come. It's like that spiritually. The weeds, the worldly things, are always trying to grow in. The weeds took over the vineyard. It may not have been a long time. A little, like it says, like it is written, a little folding of the hands, a little rest. You know, if you sit there and say, well, I'm going to mess with that garden for a couple weeks. You can go out there, you're going to have a mess. Weeds have choked all your plants out. Now what are you going to do? You have to go out there every day. You have to tend it. You have to take a look at it. Keep an eye on it. You may have aphids. You may have bugs that are on your plants eating them up. You might not notice. You might not catch it soon enough. The bugs are eating your plants. They're first at an obvious. You glance out there. It's like everything looked fine. But if you don't go out there and look close and examine closely, you don't realize you got bugs eating your plants. Same thing spiritually. You may have something corrupting you spiritually and you're just not paying attention. When you apply the spiritual to what is written here, a little folding of the hands, the worldly things, the temptations of the world, the temptations common to man, are like the weeds. They're always trying to creep in on you. They're always trying to get a hold. They're always trying to grow. You're not watering them. You're not fertilizing them. You're not, well, hopefully you're not. There are people who do that. But as a believer, hopefully you're not doing that. You're doing your best to work through and keep the weeds out. But a little folding of the hands, a little just, I don't have time for the Lord. I don't have time. I've been working all week. I got one day off this week. And even though, yeah, I have an hour or two, I could sit down and read a little from the Bible and pray and try to reset spiritually and try to learn something about the Lord. I could do that. Or I could watch the ball game and have a beer. I'll have time for the Lord later. I'll do it another day. The weeds are always growing in. A little folding of the hands, a little rest, a little of putting off the spiritual, and the weeds will take you over. It just will. This is the warning here. The weeds weren't fertilized. They just took over. They, by default, they will take over. You're in this world. If you're not cultivating your spiritual, the default setting is the weeds will take over your spiritual life because you are in the world. It's not because God has stacked the deck against you. He's just being mean and unfair. No, it's because you are literally in the world. So worldly things would naturally encroach on you because this is where you're at. You're trying to cultivate the spirit, the spiritual, but you're not in the spiritual realm per se. You're not in the eternal realm yet. You're cultivating that for the harvest, which is when you leave time. That's why it's going to be so much easier when we're out of here because the worldly things will no longer be encroaching upon us. But while you're in the world, the natural orders, of course, worldly things are going to be kind of the default setting. You know, you hear people argue and debate, are man naturally sinful or they just get corrupted? You're in the world. Worldly things are naturally going to encroach on you like weeds in your garden. You don't cultivate the weeds, but they do pretty good. Worldly things are like that in your spiritual self, in your life, because that's the default setting because you are in the world. So of course those things are going to naturally encroach on you if you don't keep them weeded out. If you're not constant, that's why you've got to baby your tomato plants. You got to baby your spiritual. You got to cultivate your spiritual self and keep working on that and keep the weeds out. You have to make the time, even when you don't feel like you've got to always cultivate your spiritual, because a little rest and the world will encroach on you. I 100% guarantee you, you know, all good intentions aside, you have to put in the effort. You have to put in the work, because the world will grow in on you. The weeds will grow in on you. And pretty soon you ain't got no garden. You got a big ass weed patch and nothing to show for. We're going to wrap up on that note. Hope you got something out of the whole show, especially the Christian specific segment. I think our final part here, I think this is the best part, in my opinion, but I hope you got something out of all of it. Makes the effort worth it, you know, all the time it takes to do it. If you get something out of it, it makes it worth it. So again, I hope you got something out of it. Dr. Johnson should be here tomorrow with the Orthodox Nationalist Show. And as always, he'll wrap up our week on Thursday with his installment of the Daily Nationalist. Hope you'll get a chance to check all of that out as well. Hope you have a good week. And of course, as always, hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.